It's like, I've got this test tomorrow. I've got this case next month. Like, I really need to focus on that. And I'll put attention into the relationship once I have time or when we go on vacation. That is completely dysfunctional.
Welcome to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Series. My name is Adam Arkfeld, an entrepreneur, marketer, and seeker of high-performing habits, tips, and strategies. Each week, I'll bring to you an elite performer, a legal expert, or simply a strategy to help you see and follow the path to personal greatness in your firm and life. Thank you for joining us today. Now let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Arkfeld, president and founder of Prevail Legal Marketing. And today, I have the pleasure of Dr. Alexandra Stockwell joining me. Dr. Stockwell, or Alexandra, as she gave me permission to call her throughout the episode, is the owner of Alexandra Stockwell Coaching. She's known as the Intimacy Doctor, and she's the best-selling author of Uncompromising Intimacy. So today's podcast is going to be a little bit different. We're veering off of the business train, sort of, and we're going to be talking about intimacy and how that affects our personal and business lives. So Alexandra, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. And I'm kind of intrigued by the introduction because, yes, it's veering off the beaten path of what people talk about, but it is so relevant. It always surprises me when people think of it as like a topic on the side because it's like salt. It just is in all of the food, even if we never mention it.
It's a really good way to put it. I should also mention that we're recording this on Valentine's Day. So just a very appropriate day for the conversation. Let's just start. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your background, why and how you're known as the Intimacy Doctor and what your coaching business and just, you know, profession sort of encompass?
Sure. Thank you. So I went to medical school. I did all of my physician training and had my own small practice as a family medicine doctor north of Boston for many years. And I was in my mid-30s, married to the love of my life. We had three children. We now have four, but we had three then. I'd paid off my student loans, and I was living the life that I had worked hard to create. I had been ambitious and driven, and here it was. But I didn't have that sense of satisfaction that I had anticipated once I got there. And I knew that while everything was fine, and I really did love practicing medicine, I wasn't looking forward to another three or four decades of doing the exact same thing. So eventually I found the courage to take a sabbatical. This was long before physician burnout was a widespread phenomenon. It definitely took courage to take a sabbatical in 2005, 2006. And I ended up just doing things I'd never had time to do before, taking an art class, just having a day that didn't have anything on the schedule. And one thing led to another. And I eventually, for my own purposes and for the purposes of my marriage, took an extremely in-depth, year-long sensuality and sexuality training in order to enhance my own life, my husband's life, etc. And it doubled as a coach training, this program that I did, but I did it for personal reasons, but I'm a curious person. And so I went to the teaching lab and I just knew I'd come home, that I got to use so many of my physician skills, which obviously weren't taught in the program, but I had them and I could really expand and serve people in an area where most people don't even know where to look for support. And therapy is often unappealing because you talk, in fact, just as in the past few days, I've talked to multiple couples who worked with a therapist and found it useless. Not that all therapists are useless. That's not my point at all. But people don't realize how with coaching, so much opens up and makes the relationship so much better. So I've really designed my business around offering that service. I have been using Zoom since 2017. I work with clients all over the world, and it is amazing how far a little education will go.
Yeah, that's great. Can you maybe just explain a little bit between the difference of maybe therapy and coaching? Because I know that even in my mind, you know, in this topic area in particular, it seems a little bit blurry. So like, what are some things you're able to do in coaching that you wouldn't be able to do as a therapist? I would imagine you have significantly more freedom.
Okay. Well, yes, I do have more freedom because I'm not bound by certain specific regulations and standards of care that a therapist needs to adhere to. For me, as a responsible, well-trained physician and professional, that's fantastic. But I do want to say that that means that people who coach in this area don't have the same, they don't have to honor standards beyond the ones that they personally have. So this is both a plus and a minus when it comes to helping people with relationships. But, and when I distinguish coaching and therapy, I want to be very clear that there always are exceptions to this. But by and large, the therapeutic model is really about healing problems. It is much more coming from the lens of taking things from bad to good. And people need that service for sure. But as a relationship coach, while I'm certainly capable and do take people from bad to good, I'm much more oriented personally to helping people go from good to great. I love helping couples who love one another, they're committed to one another. There's not even necessarily a lot of conflict, but they know there can be more aliveness, more passion, deeper emotional connection. That is my sweet spot. But if I talk about coaching in general, it really is much more goal-oriented and results-oriented. So when I coach a couple, I start by asking each of them, what do you want? Like, what do you want to be experiencing? And then that's what we move towards. I'm not starting with, how are you suffering?
Right. Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, so based on what you described, it sounds like maybe people are having real marital difficulties, you know, at least as far as you're concerned, you know, therapy might be kind of like a foundation for your work is more about, you know, the marriage isn't in trouble. They're just looking to go to the next step. And along those lines, can you paint a picture, you know, if someone's, you know, kind of driving and they're listening to this podcast, what does a good relationship look like before it goes to great? Like, what are some signs that a relationship is in the good category?
That, you know, I've been interviewed on, I don't know, at least 200 podcasts, and no one has asked that question. And I really love it. I think it's a brilliant question. So one thing is that I really see that each relationship is different. And so what works for one couple doesn't work as well. Like, what can feel good to one couple would not feel good to another. So I just really want to honor that basically any couple is going to determine this for themselves. But what I would say in general is that we have what, in my opinion, is an epidemic of relationships which are conflict-free and passion-free. And that's what I would put in the good category. It's like, there's nothing wrong. Things are stable. Sure, there's some disagreements, but basically parenting and financial decisions are made collaboratively and you're nice to one another and everything is definitely good enough and there's a lot of love, but it is fundamentally conflict-free and passion-free. And so when I think of a great relationship, I use the term uncompromising intimacy to describe what it takes. And I'll explain that a little bit because far and away, the most common relationship advice that is given is if you want a great marriage, you have to learn to compromise. Compromise is the name of the game. And if you want a pleasant companionship, compromise will absolutely give that to you. But if you want emotional intimacy, erotic connection, passion, compromise won't give that to you because in compromise, we hold back what our own experience and desires are in order to make things comfortable for our partner. And so when I'm talking about uncompromising intimacy, I'm talking about not that you dominate, not that you always get your own way, but that you bring all of yourself to the relationship, share what your dreams are, your desires, your challenges. You speak the truth with kindness and make room for your partner to do the same as well. And once you both bring your whole selves to the relationship, then, well, the energy rises, the connection deepens, and there's the possibility of being creative in addressing both people's needs and desires, which you never have a chance to do if you're holding back because you think it really just will be uncomfortable for your partner. So I think a great relationship does include some conflict, but whether it's conflict or like beautiful collaboration, whatever it is, you learn how to have it enhance your connection, have it bring you forward. And it's really necessary to have a growth mindset in order to really have a wonderful relationship.
Yeah. So you're saying, you know, just to make sure I understand, that if you're compromising all the time and everything's good, you're not really saying, and maybe in some cases getting exactly what you like really truly want, like deep down. And it's not that you necessarily need to win all the time or you need to fight about it, but when you kind of move out of the compromise mindset and it's more about like authentically sharing exactly what you want, then there's deeper emotional connection. But the compromise sort of like mutes that emotional connection. Is that sort of?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And that muting of it works in day-to-day life. But if we don't, as human beings, have some magical switch that gets flipped, if we're muting ourselves, if we're kind of like getting out of the way of what might be unpleasant for our partner, and so holding ourselves back in day-to-day interactions, there's not a switch that we can flip in order to be self-expressed and present and all the way participating when we're having a more intimate moment in the bedroom. We need to, if we want the passion, we need to be more whole and expressive. I don't mean everyone needs to be an extrovert. That's not what I mean by more expressive, but to really bring what's true rather than muting it. And I really enjoy saying, because it's clear when you think about it, that when it comes to a one-night stand or very early in dating, what I'm saying isn't true. You don't even have to know your partner's name in order to have a very satisfying experience. But in a long-lasting relationship, in marriage or living together for years, it's not really possible to have beautiful, connected, erotic intimacy without the depth of emotional connection, which is incompatible with the muting that comes with compromise.
So what are some ways that couples go from, you know, the more compromising conversation to uncompromising, you know, in a healthy way where you're not just saying, this is what I want, you know, like deal with it. You're still like, I mean, aren't you still ultimately compromising? I mean, now that I'm thinking about this, do you ultimately get to a compromise, or because I how does that work practically speaking, you know?
Okay. Well, no. I don't think you ultimately compromise. It really depends what the issue is. So there are all kinds of low-level things that people compromise on, and it just becomes a habit. Like maybe a couple, she really loves Thai food, and he just wants to have Italian, American, like he's not interested in the interesting flavors of Thai food. And she's fine with Italian food. So they, for years, end up just having Italian because she doesn't want to say, you know what, I'm really craving Thai food, because he's not going to find something good on the menu. And she'll be okay having Italian food. But that is compromise. And when she says, you know, I want you to enjoy your food, I definitely do, but I am craving Thai food. I miss it and I want to have some. He's not likely to get offended. I mean, not in a healthy relationship. Maybe they each get takeout and have a meal in the park, or maybe he eats at home and then they go to the Thai restaurant and he finds one dish, you know, he has some broth, you know, like there are ways where they can now be creative and collaborate in a way that is totally impossible if all the information isn't shared by both of them. So that's just a very simple example. With bigger things like one person wants to send the children to private school and the other to public school. Like, this is a recurring argument in many households of educated, successful couples. Usually, when they both really share what matters and bring the fullness without compromise, it may or may not be that it's public school that's important or it's private school that's important. It's usually something underneath that, like one wants their children in a safer situation with a smaller class size, or like it's the public school and the private school are the umbrella things. But when you get into what is it that you want the certain curriculum covered, or you want more diversity, like whatever it is that is really the important thing, maybe it turns out there's an equally good or even better way to bring that experience to your children's lives, even if they end up going to the type of school which wasn't what you envisioned. That's not compromise. And even if there is a decision that isn't the one you would have wanted, it feels completely different after a really thorough collaboration, exploring all of the options together and choosing together. That is a totally different experience of connection than if you never said it in the first place, which is a way of creating disconnection and actually control. But you asked another question earlier. I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember.
Okay. But it was a really good question, but we'll have to let it go.
That's okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, what I was thinking is it's like, it almost feels like curiosity is like what's coming to mind. Like, you know, you can have.
Yes, actually, that reminds me of the question. You said, okay, what is something people can do? You gave me the question earlier. Now you're giving me the answer, because pivoting from a relationship flavored with compromise to uncompromising intimacy is not necessarily that dramatic or time intensive or challenging to do. There are six essential keys to a relationship of uncompromising intimacy. And the first one is to cultivate curiosity. There are these incredible statistics that couples typically speak for something about something other than logistics and children for less than 4 minutes a day. And we understand why that is, any of us with kids and pets and bills to pay and so forth. But if you think of the toll that takes on the relationship, it's real. And the other thing is that if you think of the experience of being in love, it is one that is defined by curiosity. You want to know everything. Like, how did you get that scar? And what did you want to be when you grew up? And what do you daydream about? And which vegetables did you like when you were a kid? Like, we just have a million questions of all layers of importance. And then we feel safe, we feel secure, there's a stability in the relationship, which is really beautiful. But with that, we become less curious. We become more comfortable. We know what our partner is likely to order from the restaurant and we don't ask. And same thing with other more important internal experiences. And so really one of the very first things to do, which can have a remarkable impact, is to cultivate curiosity and ask open-ended questions. And depending on what it is you actually want to know about your partner. It can be whimsical, it can be serious, it can be sexual, it can be spiritual. I enjoy encouraging couples just to start with, if you could have dinner with any celebrity, live or dead, who would it be and what would you want to talk about? If you could be, in fact, for listeners on this podcast, if there's one law that you could just remove from the books, which one would it be and what would you want instead? You know, there's a way in which we continue to grow, but don't necessarily bring all that growth and personal evolution into the relationship because it only naturally comes out in the context of curiosity. What was the most challenging part of your week? What are you looking forward to at work this week? How often do you actually speak with your partner about what's happening at work unless you're talking about it all the time? And then probably it's time to be curious about things that aren't related to work.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, it's, I think about, you know, like who I was when my wife and I got married and like who I am now. And it's just like, we are so different as people, like individuals, you know? And it's like, you almost have to like, you know, keep, I don't know what the word is, but like exploring the, like, you know, like learning about the other person because they're just changing. Like I've changed so dramatically. It's like, you know, anytime I'm kind of, you know, frustrated with my wife about something and I'm like, you know, this is whatever. It's like, I've changed as much as she has, you know, we've both just like changed a lot. You're always changing together, but sometimes it's hard to change together because you see the person as who they were in the past. And so these questions I could see exploring.
Yeah. You express that so beautifully. And you also describe the results of being curious because you say, yes, you and your wife have changed so much, but you can imagine that there are couples where they've each changed a lot, but they haven't brought it into the relationship. Like maybe you're growing with your friends or you're growing in your career and the relationship itself ends up being stagnant, even though time passes and things happen. But to be able to share that growth and have your partner think, I've changed so much and you've changed so much, that is a form of intimacy and togetherness that happens naturally if you orient that way, but it doesn't happen in all relationships. And it's what contributes to the phenomenon of conflict-free and passion-free.
Yeah. Will you talk a little, what's your experience with, you know, this is the high-performance legal entrepreneur. So it's, you know, theoretically, you know, on the surface, more business focused, but how does this sort of thing play into business? Or does it, or what's your experience with people that own businesses or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, it plays in very directly, although it's not always perceived. So first of all, when people become very successful in their careers, typically their relationships suffer. 84% of high-performing professionals describe being dissatisfied with their relationships. However, people who have excellent relationships, that correlates with more success and satisfaction at work. So I won't be, but if I were just to set the curriculum for MBA programs, I would include a course on how to really maximize and create a fantastic relationship because it's both good for the relationship and the people in it and the family and so forth, but it also correlates with more success in business. And the way that I think about that is that if you know how to connect with your partner and track when to ask a question, when to listen quietly, when to share, how to be present when the other person has intense emotions without trying to make them go away or rescue them, but just really be present together. Like all of the things that contribute to the richness of intimacy in a personal, in a romantic relationship, it doesn't feel the same when you're in professional interactions, But if you have that kind of marriage or personal partnership, you are simultaneously growing much, much better people skills and able to read people, be more effective, be more efficient. That's certainly one thing that happens, that communicating with your staff. And if you're an aggressive attorney in the courtroom, you should be able to be more successful in that role. It's not all like sweet and connected. It's that you get people at a deeper unconscious level naturally as a result of learning how to be more authentic and more connected with your spouse. That's certainly one thing. Another thing is that couples who have fantastic relationships are much more individually confident and willing to take risks professionally. It's a completely different thing to attempt a new business venture when you're coming home to someone who doesn't care or is critical or kind of inadvertently looks down on you, doesn't see your potential. But if your partner is your biggest fan, you will be more capable in work because you've got someone at your back. You don't have to protect your back. So there are many ways in which what we're talking about should, not in a one-to-one kind of way, but in a general way, should impact high performance and the bottom line.
Yeah. Well, the last example you gave, for me, I think about energy a lot and, you know, what sort of energy is like in a space or that I'm getting from someone, and then my own energy and how that results from it. And, you know, if there's something hard going on at work, or like you said, you want to take a risk or do something, and there's something that's sucking energy out of you at home, it just makes it that much harder to do that thing. It's like, but if there's someone, like you said, is your cheerleader, it's so much easier, right? I mean, it's just, there's more momentum and there's more support, and it's just a lot easier sort of move to make.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing I would add to all of this is that for those of us who are ambitious and driven and have worked hard with going to school and then in our professions, it is very, very easy to move forward with the idea that down the line, we'll really put attention into our relationship. It's like, I've got this test tomorrow. I've got this case next month. Like, I really need to focus on that. And I'll figure out, like, I'll put attention into the relationship once I have time or when we go on vacation. That is completely dysfunctional. It might work for a particular weekend or for a particular finite phase, but as a general approach, most likely that relationship is not going to be there 20 years later once you now have the security and the wherewithal at work to really dive in. That has been creating a lot of hurt and a lot of disconnection, and repairing something like that is really not very easy. It really, it's not an effective mode.
Yeah. Well, yeah, on the personal development sort of category, it's like, especially I consider myself like a type A, like high achiever. It's like you have all these things to focus on. It's like your body and your health, and then your relationship and your business and maybe spirituality. And I've historically been business first because that's like how I am successful. That's like, you know, that's where that's like my ego. But it has definitely affected my relationship. And about a year ago, I just sort of had the thought, it's like, all right, well, I go all in on my business first, and that's the priority. And what I've heard from other people too is your relationship just suffers, just like you explained. It's like you prioritize that and then your relationship suffers. But if you go all in on your relationship, then your business like almost never suffers from going all in on your relationship. It's just like, you never hear anyone saying like, God, I have like this really amazing marriage and my business like crumbled. It's just like, it doesn't work that way. So why?
But it can feel like it will. It really can. I want to express understanding for that. Like logically what you're saying, it's so clean, but emotionally it doesn't feel that way. And one of the reasons it doesn't feel that way is that for anyone who's type A, high performing, we know how to identify a problem and what to do to solve it. We know what resources to contact. Like, we know how to make a plan and just make things right and successful. And if not, we know exactly what to learn for the next time so it can still feel like progress. But when it comes to relationships, it's not that way. And it can be very disorienting for someone who's analytical and ambitious to realize that all the usual skills that lead to success and competence aren't really helpful when you're in a really complicated time with your partner, because relationships don't follow those same rules. And so when I coach someone who's high performing, one of the very first things is for them to be willing to be uncertain. It's not just about beginner's mind, because beginner's mind implies that you're going to start and then you're going to learn and you're going to make progress and you still get to use all those usual skills. When it comes to relationships, we have to be open to things that don't make sense and can feel uncertain. And I don't think someone needs to sit in that for too long, but it can be the thing that holds people back from really going all in on their relationship in the beautiful way you expressed it.
What's an example of that? What do you mean by being uncertain? I'm having a hard time sort of
understanding
what that might mean.
Okay, well, that's
for someone like me who's a high performing.
Okay, well, that's because you don't hear as I do. Like, this is one scenario. That's a typical scenario in a heteronormative couple where he is smart, he's willing to change, he just can't figure out what to do that's going to work for her. And so he needs to be willing to let go of like bullet pointing the issues and deciding what to tackle first. Like, for example, I was speaking recently with a man who he's a civil engineer and he's used to identifying the problem, being clear, like you can imagine, he's a civil engineer. And so he thought his wife has been clear, she wants more affection. And so he understands that. So he started giving her more hugs and kisses, and she is repulsed and turns away. And it's just worse than if he had never done that. That is an example where he needs to, I'm calling it uncertain, because he needs to really believe that she was sincere, that she wants more affection. He needs to believe that he wants to give it, but he's totally uncertain how to touch her in a way that she's going to enjoy and she says she's yearning for. And he feels like he has tried everything. He has like come slowly across the room so she knows that he's coming. He surprised her. He's given her a light kiss. He's given her a more intense kiss. Like, he's just feeling crumpled and incompetent because he gets the desire, but he doesn't know how to get to something certain. He doesn't know how to find solid ground in honoring her desire. Now, that might sound a little extreme to some listeners, and others are going to be like, I know exactly what she's talking about.
And so, I mean, that's really interesting. Like when someone finds themselves in a situation like that, I'm thinking about myself and it's like, my wife and I are sort of arguing and like, we're mentally disconnected. Like, you know, there's like a mental disconnect. It's like, I don't want anything like physical things, physical connection to me is just like not a thing. It's like, no, like, if, and so I don't know, in situations that you're describing like that, is there a mental disconnection that's then filtering into the physical piece that, you know, he thinks it's physical and for her it's like mental?
Yes. But people don't typically have a depth of understanding with that. I have to say that I learned it in the opposite direction very early in my coaching career when I worked with a couple where they were both physicians and they loved one another. Things were stable. They were on track with their fiscal goals. They had three children in elementary, middle, and high school, and they hadn't had sex in 9 months. And so they reached out to me wanting help in reigniting that. And when I met them, I was clear that the first thing was like they and I needed to trust one another because these are people who aren't used to talking about their problems. It's different when someone's on the verge of divorce, suddenly all this stuff comes out, but not when things are stable. And they also needed to rebuild emotional rapport with one another in order to be able to discuss and explore the necessary things. And so I think we met probably three or four sessions and I felt like they were really reconnected emotionally. And so I was like, okay, let's start talking about what's happening in the bedroom. And they just smiled and she's like, we're all set. We never even needed to discuss sex at all because what really needed repair was the emotional connection. You're calling it the mental connection, but we're referring to the same thing. And I have a program called the Aligned and Hot Marriage Program for couples who want more sensual, sexual, erotic intimacy. And the whole thing really is a course in how to create emotional intimacy, because 8 out of 10 couples, when they really experience the emotional connection, the physical connection happens pretty easily. There are some couples, about 20-25%, where it makes sense for me to focus on the sex itself, but so those conversations are simpler. And for most people, all of that kind of intimacy is simpler when there's, well, what I talk about with uncompromising intimacy, when there isn't a muted connection or separation emotionally and mentally.
Yeah. So, you know, with uncompromising intimacy, the phrase happy wife, happy life probably isn't your tagline.
No, it isn't. Although I would say self-expressed and seen and heard wife, happy life.
That's too complicated to
yes,
permeate
well,
society.
Though. I'm not in the business of taglines, but yes.
I love it. All right. Well, Alexandra, thank you so much for the conversation. If people want to learn more about you and your programs, you know, where would they go?
The best place is the intimatemarriagepodcast.com. I have a podcast called The Intimate Marriage and alexandrastockwell.com.
And you also have a book.
Yes.
Where were they found?
If you go to my website, alexandrastockwell.com, you can find my book, my podcast, my programs, and by all means, reach out to me directly if you like. I love getting emails and messages and will personally respond.
All right. Well, thank you so much again for joining me. And everybody listening, we'll see you in the next episode. Thanks, Alexandra.
Thank you. Thank you for such good questions.